When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Nonprofit hospitals get big tax breaks in exchange for a promise of caring for people in need. How do they do in that mission compared to for-profit hospitals?
In states that did not expand Medicaid, which is where you would expect the most people to remain in need of financial assistance, we saw the gap between the for-profits, which did more, and the nonprofits, which did less.
And how consumers are responding to inflation, and why GM saw profits tumble in the second quarter. Plus, it may pay to switch jobs, but is a raise worth it? It's Tuesday, July 26th. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that move the world today. Consumers looking for relief from high prices may have to wait. Executives at major consumer brands like Coca-Cola, Unilever, Kimberly-Clark, and McDonald's say they've raised prices by 9% to 12% to cover increased costs. They say so far demand is holding up, and they're not planning to bring down prices for now. Those hikes are a key reason U.S. inflation accelerated to 9.1% in June, a four-decade high. The Federal Reserve meets tomorrow, and it's expected to raise interest rates again to slow demand and stabilize prices. But some companies say they're noticing consumers pulling back. The makers of Whirlpool appliances and Weber grills say they've seen weaker demand. Walmart, the biggest retailer in the U.S. by sales, says consumers were cutting back on merchandise like apparel as they adjusted to higher fuel and food prices. Leaders at McDonald's said lower-income customers are trading down to value offerings and buying fewer combo meals. General Motors says it will be curtailing some hiring but isn't planning layoffs after net profits tumbled 40% in the second quarter. The auto giant says it was hurt by losses in China and supply chain problems that held back production even while customer demand kept inventory tight. Wall Street Journal Automotive's reporter Mike Colias has more.
That was mostly due to the fact that they couldn't make trucks and SUVs during the quarter. They had to set aside almost 100,000 vehicles because they didn't have enough computer chips and some other supply chain problems. So it really showed that that problem of the semiconductor shortage that has gone on for 18 months is by no means over. And they also lost some money in China, which is pretty rare. And commodity costs were a big problem too. So those three things combined, they missed analyst expectations, which is pretty rare for the company.
But Mike says the company is still optimistic. During a conference call, GM CEO Mary Barra said there's no sign that pent-up demand for new cars is waning. The mixed earnings reports brought all three major indexes down today. The S&P closed down 1.2%, the Dow fell 229 points, or 0.7%, and the Nasdaq was down 1.9%. After the bell, Microsoft and Google parent Alphabet both reported sharp slowdowns in their business strongholds. Alphabet says it saw the slowest quarterly sales growth in 2 years as pressure weighed on the market for digital ads. The company is considered a bellwether for the strength of online advertising. And Microsoft reported its lowest earnings growth in 2 years due to a surprising slowdown in its cloud business and a decline in video game-related sales. The Education Department has told contractors that service federal student loans not to send out billing statements just yet. The guidance comes ahead of an August 31st deadline for President Biden to decide whether to end a pandemic freeze on the loan payments. Here's WSJ National Economics reporter Gabriel Rubin.
There's no plan that's been announced for another extension. This is something that's been extended 6 times before. Basically everyone from borrowers to loan servicers to the Department of Education, even to White House staffers themselves, is waiting on one thing: for President Biden to make a decision about what he wants to do with the federal student loan portfolio. The clock is really ticking here. Every day we get closer to August 31st, and President Biden needs to make a decision one way or another if payments are going to resume and if he is going to cancel some amount of debt for a large number of borrowers.
Biden told reporters last month that another extension was on the table. Home prices keep rising, even as mortgage rates climb. The Case-Shiller Price Index, which measures average home prices in major metropolitan areas, rose 19.7% in the year ended in May, down from a 20% annual rate the month before. But higher mortgages have pushed some buyers out of the market. The average rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage was at 5.54% last week, up from 2.7% a year before, according to Freddie Mac. Many Americans are still moving to suburban and low-cost areas. The Wall Street Journal and Realtor.com ranked where housing markets provide a strong return on investment and high quality of life. Elkhart, Indiana, Burlington, North Carolina, and Johnson City, Tennessee topped the list. We have the full rankings at WSJ.com. European countries agreed today to cut their natural gas consumption by 15% starting next month as Russia slashes supplies. The cutbacks are voluntary for now, but could become mandatory in an emergency. They mark a major intervention in European gas markets. The EU reached the deal a day before Russia is set to choke gas exports through the Nord Stream pipeline to 20% of capacity. Russia blames sanctions holding up its turbines overseas. European officials say that's a smokescreen for Russia to weaponize its energy. The International Monetary Fund has lowered its outlook for global economic growth again this year. The IMF says inflation and the war in Ukraine have cut into household purchasing power, while pandemic lockdowns took momentum out of China's growth. The IMF is now projecting world economic growth to slow to 3.2%, compared to an expansion above 6% last year. It says growth in 2023 will slow further to 2.9% and could get even more sluggish as inflation keeps rising. And the U.S. has more known cases of monkeypox than any other country, according to federal data. There are 3,400 cases nationally of the nearly 18,000 worldwide. The virus has appeared predominantly in men who have sex with men, but public health experts say rising transmissions heighten the chances it will spread more broadly, and the window to stop the global outbreak is closing. The Department of Health and Human Services says it has shipped more than 300,000 doses of the two-dose Jynneos vaccine around the U.S. The agency says it has accelerated inspection for another 800,000 doses this summer and millions more by the middle of next year. Coming up, nonprofit hospitals get billions of dollars in tax breaks on the promise that they'll give poor patients free or cheaper care. But a Wall Street Journal investigation shows they are falling short. That's after the break.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
The U.S. government gives a tax break to hospitals that call themselves nonprofits. Those breaks add up to more than $60 billion a year, according to one estimate. The idea is that these nonprofits will give back to their communities, for example, by offering free or discounted care. But a Wall Street Journal analysis found that nonprofit hospitals lag behind their for-profit counterparts when it comes to charity care. The Wall Street Journal's Melanie Evans covers hospitals. She's one of the reporters who worked on this investigation. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. For this investigation, you've been analyzing data on nonprofit and for-profit hospitals and what services they offer. Paint us a picture of what you found.
Nonprofit hospitals do less than for-profit hospitals in aggregate. So we looked at this question because nonprofit hospitals get a lot of money in tax breaks. They don't pay property taxes. They don't pay federal taxes.
And they don't pay those taxes because they're supposed to be giving back to their communities. And one of the most direct ways that they can give back is by writing off the medical bills of people who can't afford to pay for health care. They basically either they just erase the bill or they erase part of it. And we looked at what nonprofits spend in aggregate of their annual revenue. So they're bringing in money from patients and then they're taking some of that and they're using it to write off bills. And it turns out they write off about 2.3% of their revenue, which is less than what for-profits do. So for-profits don't get tax breaks. And for-profits in aggregate spent 3.4% of their revenue on financial aid for patients.
How did nonprofit hospitals respond when you brought them those numbers?
They said that we have not fully captured everything that they do to earn those tax breaks. So they do other things like train doctors, which is expensive, and they take care of Medicaid patients, and Medicaid doesn't pay them enough. We also spoke with researchers who've looked at the same question we did, and those researchers said to us, the most direct measure of giving back is giving away medical care for free.
So this is really the number to look at. Did you see any difference when you looked at the government's role, like Medicaid expansion or how government hospitals give people support?
So yes, government hospitals did the most for their low-income patients. They did more than either the for-profits and the nonprofits. Government also provides insurance for low-income households through the Medicaid program. Under the Affordable Care Act, states could choose, do they want to make more people eligible for that safety net or not? In states that did not expand Medicaid, which is where you would expect the most people to remain in need of financial assistance, we saw the gap. We saw the gap between the for-profits, which did more, and the nonprofits, which did less.
It seems like every hospital here is setting its own rules. Is that the case?
In some states, there are some criteria, but for the most part, hospitals have very wide latitude, and they use it. I mean, we read a lot of financial assistance policies, and it's income level and assets. In one case, we encountered a financial assistance policy that asked whether or not you were unemployed without a medical reason. That policy has since been changed, but that gives you a sense of the breadth of criteria that hospitals employ when they decide who can get some help.
This leaves individuals having to make their own decisions about care. You and your colleague spoke to one man who was an uninsured truck driver and was having chest pains and had to rush to a hospital to get care. What kind of resources do people like that man have when it comes to choosing where to get care and then appealing bills they can't afford?
Unfortunately, in a case like that, there isn't a lot of choice. It's a medical emergency, and you're going to go to the hospital. You'll probably go to the nearest hospital. So in those cases, maybe one of the best things to keep in mind is that financial aid exists. It can be very poorly promoted. It can be in the footnotes of a bill. The best thing to keep in mind when you're stuck with a bill and you don't know how to pay for it is to pick up the phone and ask somebody, what is your financial assistance policy and can I get some help with the application?
That's very helpful advice. That was Wall Street Journal reporter Melanie Evans, who covers hospitals. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And finally, should I stay or should I go? New data shows that the pay difference between workers who stay at their current jobs and those who leave is growing. As of this June, people who stayed increased their wages by about 4.7%, while those who switched jobs got a raise of 6.4%, the largest gap in two decades. But Wall Street Journal personal finance reporter Julia Carpenter says that decision can be tricky.
So when you're leaving one job for a new job, there's a trade-off. You know, you're trading off higher pay for some unknowns. So you know the new responsibilities at your current job. You know the existing work culture. You know the existing tasks and duties and how people are weighing your performance and weighing how you're being successful there. That's all going to be new at a new place. And I think something that a lot of people are thinking about right now is, okay, do I want to be taking on that risk when we have this possible recession on the horizon? If I'm the last person to be hired at this new place, that means I could be the first to be let go. So that's something people are also considering as we're looking at the horizon.
You can hear more about this story on our sister podcast, Your Money Briefing. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.